This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, March 21st, 2024. I'm Caleb Brown. According to author Ryan Yonk, a lot of the fearful, aggressive rhetoric in discussions about China don't hold a lot of sway, if we use a fairly basic public choice analysis. His new co-authored book is The China Dilemma, Rethinking U.S.-China Relations Through Public Choice Theory. The book urges Americans to think more clearly about U.S. engagement with China by merely understanding more clearly what the government wants, what the people in China want, and how U.S. policy should adjust. We spoke last week in Dallas.
Ryan, you and I are here at the Public Choice Society meeting in Texas. And I think one of the things that when people describe public choice in a very basic thumbnail sketch, they say politics without romance.
They do indeed.
And so my thought is, you know, it might also be worth characterizing in some ways public choice as politics without fear, which is to say that we're trying to evaluate the decision-making processes of people who are in the public sector.
Yeah, absolutely. We're want to take a look at politics without any of either the romance or the fear or any of the things that we often just reflexively want to deal with, but actually take a look at it and say, can we come to understand what's motivating and why people are taking their actions?
And so when we think about China, there's a lot of attempts at making Americans fearful.
Absolutely, there is. In fact, much of my background with China comes from working with my co-author, Ethan Yang, who I should acknowledge at the very front of this, who's did the yeoman's work of plowing through mountains of documents, and I helped him apply public choice to it. He went to an event in Washington, D.C., because he likes those sorts of things, and he got to listen to a prominent U.S. senator, who we won't name, talk about how China was a grave threat and how we were selling them the rope they'll use to hang the United States. And that's really typical of how lots of these discussions about U.S. policy towards China go. And unfortunately, that means that if we believe that, we don't have a lot of options.
So to the extent that both sides broadly are wrong about China and how we, the United States, and individuals within the United States ought to interact with people in China, a couple of things figure pretty prominently. One is Taiwan. Mm-hmm. The U.S. has made promises, sort of, to Taiwan in the event of an attempted takeover or an attack. So it's very popular to say, yeah, well, China inevitably is going to take over Taiwan or is going to try mightily to take over Taiwan. How does public choice analysis inform that discussion?
Public choice actually suggests that we take a step back because almost all of those claims are assumptions that, in fact, Chinese policy will follow the rhetoric and the propaganda that they've used. When, in fact, when you start to dig in to many of the statements, the threat of taking over Taiwan and Taiwan as an issue for the leadership of the CCP, particularly President Xi, is a core part of how he messages and stays in power. And so, in many ways, the notion that Taiwan is this grave affront to the CCP and to mainland China is far more useful to them than actually trying to take Taiwan. Because taking Taiwan is going to be high cost and not a huge probability that they could actually take it effectively because of the U.S. guarantees, because of other guarantees from other nations in the region. And simply, it's been described as an island aircraft carrier. And so the cost would be huge. And so for the CCP leadership, the nightmare scenario is attempting to take Taiwan and having it turn into something that looks like, for example, the Ukraine invasion that drags on, that they eventually may fail at. The issue is one that's ripe and important, and actually taking action removes that issue from something they can use.
What are some U.S. policies toward China that perhaps would be different if they were more informed by this analysis?
So I think there's really two big ones that come up when we talk about this, because the core of public choice analysis requires us to look at the individual level. So we think about things from what economists call the methodologically individual, meaning we're looking and saying, how do individuals act? And so for dealing with China, that means things like tariffs, where we think about China as a single economy taking action in a coordinated step. And as a result, we put tariffs in place when we may actually want to have a clearer discussion about why are certain fields being subsidized in China? Why do they put tariffs on? What's led them to do that? As opposed to the usual approach, which is simply they have them, they're a threat, therefore we should have them. And if we understand the motivations, then we can start to narrow policy and get to something other than a giant, big policy to try to deal with these issues and something far more targeted.
Okay. So on tariffs, what drives the U.S. then in specific areas to have tariffs? Some of that's wrapped up in national security.
Yeah, some of it is. But if you really listen to the rhetoric, particularly from President Trump and even from President Biden, so in this case, you have both sides of politics basically saying the same thing. They're mostly responding to the notion that you have huge Chinese intervention into their economy, and therefore we should do the same thing. It's sort of like when my mom would ask me, well, if your friends all jumped off a bridge, would you too? It's kind of where our foreign policy in this regard is at. What we suggest, I think, in our analysis is not that there might be no response to Chinese intervention, but rather to actually look at what the motivation is, what is the targeted industry that matters, and why we would take the policy in terms of U.S. interest instead of just a response.
Well, don't our intelligence agencies and other diplomatic agencies that the United States has that deal with other countries, they don't make use of public choice in any of their analysis, or they do?
Some of them use parts of public choice. The big issue is there are two major areas where we don't really think about this. And that the first is at the political level. So the rhetoric that politicians use, which then boxes in agencies, is not considering these things well. Individual analysts may be thinking about these things, but they get put in a policy box because of the rhetoric. And then the second is that particularly when we think about international relations, so the State Department and those agencies, they're reliant on the notion that somehow states are things or entities that matter that are interacting as though they're separate from their leadership in many ways. And what that ends up doing is it means we think that there's an American interest and there's a Chinese interest. But anybody who's watched American politics from this side, there's not a single American interest. And if you're going to watch for the next six or so months, you're gonna know that for sure, because it's going to be an all-out slugfest of a presidential election where it's not going to be immediately clear what the interest of, quote, America is, but rather it's the result of some domestic policies playing out that then arrive at a leadership and a policy. And so assuming that it is a single block ends up meaning that we often miss opportunities to make marginal changes because we implement a single policy.
When we as Americans read the paper and it says something to the effect of Beijing wants,
yes,
or Washington wants, it's probably time to step back a little bit and imagine that perhaps that it's more complicated than that.
Yeah, exactly. That in fact, and Americans tend to know this about their own system, but we have this vision of China because of its authoritarian nature, because it's a little bit of a black box, that there are no politics going on within the CCP, that there's no disagreement within that group, when in fact those things are there. They're functioning with different institutions, and so you don't see it as clearly. But President Xi is having to think about, what does his support in the Politburo look like? What does it look like when, who are his opponents and who are his rivals? Those things are all happening. Politics doesn't go away simply because you have more authoritarian powers. And in fact, ask a lot of authoritarian dictators of the past, things don't go super well if they forget that there are, in fact, these other things happening in the background. And President Xi of China is one of the most adept Chinese politicians in recent memory of recognizing that. And in fact, it's why you see people pulled off the Politburo periodically as he tries to ensure that he's dealing with the domestic politics.
For people who have sort of just a background fear related to China, read more news about the Chinese economy.
Yeah.
Read more news about the failure of projects in China and understand that they're dealing with a lot of the same things that the U.S. is dealing with.
Yeah. It turns out the problems of governing are true whether you're China or the United States or or really anywhere else in the world. And we should be keeping that in mind. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be actively cognizant of what's happening with the leadership in China. Doesn't mean we shouldn't be concerned when they take certain actions. It doesn't mean we shouldn't be watching their intent towards Taiwan. But it does mean that we should be thinking about what the motivations are and recognizing they have leadership just like we do that have a variety of different pressures that are coming up against them. And they're not a monolithic evil or a monolithic good. Instead, they're working through a political system as well, which I think is the big lesson of public choice through its long history, which is you have to understand both the motivations of the individual and the institutions they operate in.
There have been calls for, you know, mostly on the right, calls for essentially a Cold War.
Yeah.
With China. And that kind of disengagement from China, from you know, a not insignificant part of the global economy could be costly. But when thinking about that problem of engagement, disengagement, they're, you know, they're a massive trading partner with the U.S. How does public choice help us understand that question better?
The major thing I think public choice lets us do is look at the last time we had a major Cold War, because we've been down this path before with the Soviets. And what happened was, it wasn't as though simply disengaging meant that there wasn't going to be interactions. Instead, it turned into a series of proxy battles where interventions happened with different countries, even if we didn't have direct relations or direct interactions. And that, I think, is something that could certainly happen here. On top of that, because of the flow of information that exists today, it's not really feasible to have that sort of approach, because there's going to continue to be those sorts of interactions. And the result of the Cold War was a massive overestimation of the Soviets' power. And I expect we would see something similar if we were to go into that state with China, that we would assume they're doing all these great things and we wouldn't have insight into the fact that they have a deeply troubled economy, for example, right now, that they have struggles internally with their national security bill and popular unrest that surrounds it. And so when you don't see those things, then you start to assume that it is a monolithic authoritarian regime that is super powerful. And that ends up meaning you make lots of decisions based on ignorance and fear rather than actual engagement with what's happening in the world.
Ryan Yonk is co-author of The China Dilemma, Rethinking U.S.-China Relations Through Public Choice Theory. We spoke last week in Dallas. Free Society is the new quarterly magazine from the Cato Institute. The inaugural issue features the stories of two tenacious families in their fight for educational choice, among other stories. That's at cato.org/freesociety. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you please. And thank you for listening.